Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show. Hello, we are back with another episode of Mouthing Off, a theater arts and culture podcast coming to you, not live, pre-recorded every Wednesday on 94.1 FM Frogtown Radio or whenever you're listening, wherever you get your podcasts. We are here today without our lovely co-host, Kevin. It is just the girls. It is just me and my co-host, Amanda Forstrom. Amanda, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Summer is going too fast. It is half over, which is hard to believe, but it's been beautiful. And I'm super excited because the end of summer always signals one of the best seasons for theater and arts and culture in the Twin Cities, which is the Fringe Festival. And I'm super excited to talk to our guest today more about that.
Yes. So our guest today is John Orenstein or Orenstein. John, how do you say your last name?
Either way, I tend to say Orenstein.
Orenstein, a composer and lyricist who I believe we've had on the show before. I think you came on 2 years ago for your Antiques Roadshow musical that was also in The Fringe.
That's right. I'm happy that you remember that.
Extreme yes, but I mean, it was delightful. So, of course, I remember it. But don't let me say too much about your lore and your bio. John, introduce yourself for our team and tell everybody about your show.
Sure. Well, I am a retired lawyer. I guess I always start there. I practiced law for almost 40 years. And at the same time, I was a frustrated musician. I went to Oberlin College and Conservatory of Music, got a piano major from the conservatory, and immediately went to law school. But the urge to play never left. Fortunately, I married somebody who sings beautifully, and she was in Extreme Roadshow a couple of years ago. And she and I wrote comedy songs for many years. We still do. We used to perform them in Lanesboro at their on their summer radio show that was a sort of actual Prairie Home Companion, with real amateur actors, musicians, and writers. We do that. We collected enough of them that we put an album together called Three Blocks of Fame, because we were famous on the main street of Lanesboro and nowhere else. And as I approached retirement, I thought, maybe now is the time I can try to write a musical. So that was Extreme Roadshow with a lot of inherited items and my house that were crying out for songs to be made out of them. And that went pretty well. So I thought I'd wait a year and try again. That brought us to Make America Gray Again, which is mainly about retiring. But I found you can't write about just one thing. You write about whatever is on your mind. And we exist in this incredibly absurd political environment. So it seeped its way into the show too. And there's a little bit of corporate America there because that's where I worked for so long. So the main character is trying to make sense out of his actually involuntary retirement. He was job eliminated, a word that I got to know well as a lawyer. And he decided, well, I'm in my 60s, I'm going to retire. But issues of identity and purpose and relevance kind of shadow you in retirement. And he has to confront those. And about at the time in the show when he does, he dies. So he has to worry about that too.
An inconvenient death.
Yeah, kind of a speed bump for him.
Yes.
So the show is a little auto-fictional, but not completely, because you're here with us today. But how much of the show has bits of you and your life in it? And you do not play this main character, do you? Which is a shame, because you do have a lovely voice.
Well, thank you. But all I play is piano in this one. It's not so much autobiographical, except that it's about things I was thinking about at the time. For 4 years or so, I was very active in the Senior Lawyers Association of the Minnesota State Bar. And we would put on programs, basically education, continuing legal education programs. I quickly discovered that it's like AARP magazine. There are some things you want to do every year, every time. And it might be a different program, but it's really the same thing. The one that fit that mold was retirement. Everybody wanted to attend programs about titled things like, "Who am I now that I'm no longer doing what I was doing?" That was the theme of the retirement programs. And it got me thinking that it would be a good theme for a show. The trouble was, as I imagined it the first time, it was, well, we'll take everything that people tell you you should be doing for a successful retirement, and we'll write a song about each one. So the first one that came out that way was Born to Jog.
Do you want to play a little bit for us?
Yeah, take
right
care
now,
of yourself.
If you're able. Surprise, yeah, Amanda, try. He's at the piano.
This is fantastic. I don't think we've ever had anybody do, a live reading or play any of the work before, had any excerpts on before, except for our, recorded readings of the plays. So this is fantastic. Thank you so much, John.
Sure. It's probably because your other guests are more willing to talk about their show. And I'm thinking, what can I do? I can play the piano. So, he takes up running. That dog is taking up barking. I'm sure you can hear him too. He's advised by a talking book. It's a little background. His wife, there's a song called "He's Always Here." So his wife advises him to go out, go to the bookstore, find a book about retirement. He finds one. And she says, find a book that speaks to you. It turns out the book really does speak to him. It's the person speaking for the book comes on stage. It's Donna Rich, former financial planner. And she says, you have to do something to take care of yourself. You can't find your passion unless you feel good. You can't feel good unless you exercise. So take up running. He says, that's a pretty good idea. First, he realizes he doesn't have the clothes. So he says to the audience, talk amongst yourselves. I'll be right back. John, play something. So I play until people wander on stage stretching, and then he comes on and he says, all right, I'm ready for action. Here we go. The open road is calling me. I see that road. It's my destiny. Got a heavy load, a lot of excess weight. But if I do it every day, I know I'm gonna feel great. Got my sneakers on, they're the very top rated. Had a protein bar, and I'm fully hydrated. I've worked my back and my hamstrings to stretch my legs like a giant frog. Gotta do my stretches or my lower right calf muscle cramps right up. Baby, I was born to jog. Alternate. coordinates with the chorus who are cheering him on. They sing, 1 mile, it's a lot, but I can do it. 2 miles, what is that, some kind of joke? 3 miles, maybe I could power through it. 4 miles, I think I'd have a stroke. Gonna run today, gonna run tomorrow, if it's rainy or a cold or a hot day. And when I get back, gonna treat myself to a pumpkin cardamom latte. I could add my speed and my heart rate to maybe post them on a daily blog. I get so tired just thinking about it that I can't stand up. Baby, I was born to jog. Baby, I was born to jog. Baby, I was born to... Now he starts running. And everybody's cheering him. Come on, Dan, you can do it. Come on. Meanwhile, he's getting visibly exhausted. And he finally says, why does anybody do this? Forget it. And as he collapses, the chorus sings, born to jog. So that's the part of the show and a couple other places that satirizes the kind of advice you get about retiring.
Yes, I love it. The endless pickleball commercials, and I can see them now.
That's right.
All of the planning and the accoutrement that go with all of your activities.
Yeah, he comes out in full regalia running clothes.
Is running something that you tried to take up, or is it just advice that you heard?
I do run.
Okay, so you know everything.
It is jogging. It is not running. I was born to jog.
Well, you were born to be mild.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But not in the music. Because I want to talk about another song that is in this show. I don't want to give everything away so that people come see it, so that they don't, you know, we don't want to get the milk away for free. But you sent us a song that you wrote, a satirical song about the Heritage Foundation.
Yes.
That was delightful. Without playing it, because it has, as we said before, words that are not in the Bible.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that song? Because it's so funny.
Yeah, thanks. I'm trying to think how to, it's so hard to talk about things that are funny, you know, without doing them. It's like talking about a joke. But it actually wasn't originally for the Heritage Foundation. I just was, like everybody else around March, really shocked and angry. And so I wrote a song about how our country was now appearing on the world stage and in the eyes of most of us. Namely, if I can take a word that's not in the Bible but not in the song, like a big jerk. That we're a nation. As a people, that's who we are now. And I wrote a song that said, one chorus is, we're the biggest bullies in the school. And it now comes out of the mouth of a lecturer from the Heritage Foundation. They're looking, again, for something to do. This is Dan and his wife now. She says, you've always had a passion for education. How about going to hear a lecture? This flyer just came in the mail. It's from the Heritage Foundation. He says, aren't they political somehow? And she says, no, they can't be. It says right here, they're a 501c3. So they both think, oh, okay. And the song starts out okay. I think I can play that much. America, America, there's no place like it because it's a country founded on an idea no other country ever was. And what you may ask is that idea that inspires us yet today. I can boil it down to a very few words, and they go like this, if I may. By that time, people are expecting something, and it gets delivered in the form of, we're the biggest blank blanks on the block. Come to the show to hear what blank blanks is.
Aha, yes. Teasers, we love it. And no spoilers, just teasers. Right. Come to the show to find out what the blank blanks are.
Well,
And
and
you
one of
know,
yeah.
it goes through corruption and immigration madness and the crackdown against LGBTQ people, and it just kind of environmental damage. I managed to squeeze it all into 3 minutes. It was immensely satisfying. And I hope it's funny that we have a choreographer too. I put things in the hands of the choreographer because dance is a complete foreign language to me. And she took that song and did kind of a word for word almost choreographed version. And it's hilarious. I say that, with no pride because I didn't do it. She has, let's see, what can I do without spoiling it? She has them do Washington crossing the Delaware, forming USA with humans. It's more, one of the fun things about writing a show is that it's on the page, but everybody wants to run with it. Everybody wants to put their stamp on it. And if you don't want that, you shouldn't do theater. If you do want that, theater is really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Mari.
Oh, it's just talking about working with the choreographer and all of the amazing things that you guys are able to do with the show. I'm curious about the scale, because with the Fringe, it can really range. Do you know what theater you're in? I'm curious how many people are in the show. Speaking of which, your director is here. I'm going to
Barbara.
let her in so maybe she can shed a little bit of light on how big of a production this is going to be.
I'll bet she can.
Excellent.
Barbara,
Welcome,
you made it.
Barbara.
Hi, thank you. Sorry I'm late.
No, that is all right. I mean, you're in it now, and that is the perfect timing for us that you can join us whenever. So, Barbara, please introduce yourself and let us know what you're doing with the show and how you guys met, and just a little bit about the cast size. And Mari was asking about the performance space that you'll be in. Tell our listeners.
Great. Well, my name is Barbara Wiener, and I'm directing Make America Gray Again, which is an absolutely delightful, surreal, crazy musical by Jon Ornstein, both composing and the book. And it's it's a silly, surreal romp through a man's retirement adventures as he's trying to find meaning in his life. And we've got a cast of about eight people, really, really talented singers, dancers, actors who are doing a absolutely terrific job. So I think the audience is going to just have a romp with us.
That is excellent. How did you to meet or start collaborating? And yeah, tell us a little bit about that journey, Barbara.
John and I met through something equally silly, a Purim spiel, which is a Jewish holiday play. And John was doing music, and I was again directing, and we were sort of working independently. And John asked me to help out with Extreme Roadshow, which we did about 2 years ago. And that was so much fun that we did a Purim spiel again this last year. Every time we do one, we say we're not doing it again. And then next year we do it again. But it's been great working with John. He's an incredibly talented writer, composer, creative thinker, and just absolutely skilled.
Am I allowed to say that Barbara is a fabulous director? Can I say that? She is.
Absolutely.
Yes, I'm
Absolutely.
happy to have you say that.
And her background is, besides a lot of stage background, for most of her career, I'd say Barbara's been a film director and a very successful one. And her films are even now shown in film festivals around the world.
That's fantastic. Barbara, did you start out as a film film director and then kind of transition into theater, or the other way around?
The other way around. I started with a MFA in directing, and I worked at the Guthrie for a while and the Kennedy Center and in New York a bit. And then I went from that to public television, where I was fortunate enough to become a producer in the arts and cultural unit, and ultimately was 14 years there. And that was just this incredible journey. I specialize in cultural documentaries, and I had such great experiences there, and then became independent. I founded a nonprofit to work with girls and use media for leadership and social justice called TV by Girls. And we did lots of films together, teenage girls from all different communities. And then I became independent. And so I've been able to do both theater work and with John, and continue to do my film work.
That's so fantastic. Oh my goodness.
I have a
And
film right now that's in Monaco. It's like, I wish these films would take me along, but they don't. They go off all over the world and have a great time, hopefully being seen by a lot of audiences. So,
what is this recent film called, and what's it about?
the last one that's in Monaco is called Words That Sing, and it's actually a concert footage with a cor voce, which is a local community chamber choir, and it's focusing on the work of poet Michael Dennis Brown, and so interludes with video elements of interviews with Michael, who's a phenomenal artist in his own right. So it's one of those that was really a labor of love, and who would have thought that someone in Japan and someone in Monaco would want to see it, but they do. So that's really wonderful.
That is so amazing. Just another testament to the arts of, how we can come together locally with John and Barbara and to have this team, this awesome team of director and lyricist and composer, but also individuals from, like you said, Japan and Monaco, loving your work, Barbara, and having people be able to see it there and those connections. That's just amazing.
It's really our times for the arts are really about this intercultural complete connection. Things are so live theater is wonderful. There's nothing like that experience. And we're going to be in the Phoenix, which is a great space, a really fun space, very intimate audience. And at the same time, my work can be sent out electronically, and or someone can go on to the website of the Fringe Festival and see a little piece of Make America Gray Again. It's really a wonderful technology.
That's fantastic. Yes, we know the Phoenix well. We love the folks over there. They do a fantastic job. And I, as a performer, love primarily performer, love very intimate spaces like that because, you can't get away with anything. You can't turn away. The audience is right there with you. You're both in it. You're strapped in for the whole ride. Not the intermission, like, oh, check my phone, get some popcorn kind of thing. It's like you're in it the whole time, which I absolutely adore. And then my follow-up question for Barbara, and then we'll bring John back in, is, it's so interesting you talk about technology and uniting us, especially across these cultures. How has social media and, the burgeoning AI, what are your thoughts on how that's changed the industry from theater and film perspective for in your thoughts?
I know that my industry is particularly concerned about AI because there is that whole magic of live of performance of what real live human beings bring to something from that energy that we share. I don't think that, well, I think AI is a remarkable tool. I also teach film, and we use AI and all kinds of technology to help illuminate history and film work. But I don't think that anything can replace what real performers do. I think there is some magic that can't be captured in the electronic technology. And being in a live theater like the Phoenix and being connected and having an actor look out and make eye contact with an audience member is just life affirming. So I know there's a lot of concerns about AI, and as any technology, you sort of feel like it's a tsunami sometimes, but I think there's something very specific that can't be captured in technology, in the arts.
And just a follow-up to your work, Barbara and John, where can people find you on social media, or do you have a website where people can see more of your work?
Well, it's probably easier for me to answer because I don't have any of that.
That means that our listeners have got to come to the show.
I am on Facebook, but funny story, I one day saw that I couldn't get into my account, and people were emailing me and saying, John, are you selling crypto now? It turned out, I was hacked and my account was hijacked and it was selling cryptocurrency. So if you look for me now on Facebook, I drew a little picture of myself and said, I was hacked, this is me. So that's how you'll find me on social media.
Excellent. You didn't take up being a crypto bro, as it were, in retirement?
No, and I also didn't take up making fake testimonials and posting them on my page. This man was a family counselor. He made people rich. He did a lot in a short time.
Wow.
Including alienating my friends. But when we finally all figured it out, I couldn't get the account back. So I won't take up this podcast with my grievances against Facebook, but that's the next musical.
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Musical, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I feel like with a lot of the fraud going on, that people could really relate to that. So
I think so.
Barbara, where can people find you?
I have a Vimeo account that has my work on it. I keep thinking I'm going to make a big fancy website, and I find myself, thankfully, too busy. So my work is available. You can just Google Barbara Wiener, Wiener, and it's available for people to see as they like.
Excellent. And I also just want to plug where you can get your Fringe tickets. You can go online and find a show. They have a really nice organizational tour where you can select the content and features of shows. You can go by venues that are closest to you if you'd like, or genre if you'd like. And you can go and find that at minnesotafringe.org. One more time, that is minnesotafringe.org for the 2025 shows. And folks, yeah, get your tickets now. They have a lot of returning shows and companies and artists like John and Barbara that are just hilarious and beloved, and you don't want to miss their shows, because likely, you know, this is the only chance that you're going to get to see it. So
it's unique. You're going to have a very unique, special experience. And we have tickets 2-for-1 on the first night. So tickets are affordable on the first night.
That's fantastic. 2-for-1 tickets. You heard it here first, folks. Go get them. Grab your friends. Buy those tickets.
It's a great Fringe innovation this year. It's the first time they've done it. You, as a producer, are allowed to designate one night for 2-for-1.
That's awesome. I really love that. I really love that.
Yeah, it's amazing. The Fringe is one of the best places to go see the weirdest, wackiest, most adventurous shows that are available in the Twin Cities and in the whole state. We've had so many amazing guests on with incredible Fringe shows. including, I believe, our guest from a previous podcast, Endometriosis, the musical that began at the Fringe, correct?
Yes,
And they were able
correct.
to expand, and now they have a full run. I was curious if you guys would ever consider expanding, doing a larger run of the show, or are you trying to feel it out, see what the
Well,
Fringe audience thinks?
that would be the dream, having a show that we get produced somewhere else where I wouldn't even have to play the piano for it. I would just opine and consult and then watch it. That's what I tried to do with Extreme Roadshow. We have a video of it. It's on YouTube somewhere. And I put it out to some Minnesota theaters, got a range of responses from polite no to nothing. I don't know. This one, I feel, because it has this theme to it, it's a particular theme that some groups might be interested in. And so I think it has more of a shot. So there's one other song I might want to play you if you're interested,
Absolutely.
it's
Yeah,
about
go
that
for it.
theme. As Barbara said, there's a quality to the show that makes it a romp, and Extreme Roadshow was that way from beginning to end. Between Extreme Roadshow and now, I read Act One by Moss Hart, which is a really interesting account of him collaborating with George S. Kaufman on something called Once in a Lifetime, Moss Hart's first play. It wasn't working. They do it in out-of-town tryouts in those days. Not working. Moss Hart can't figure out why. And somebody says to him, it's a very noisy show. So he created a moment of stillness. So I've done that. I thought I can do that. And it's the part where he tries to get across to people why being retired is a problem and not just an invitation to a life of relaxation and fun. It's what I've been hearing from people in that senior section I was talking to you about. So I'm going to see if I can play it. The actor sings it a third higher than this, so I have to remember to try and sing it. If it goes into a crazy key, you'll know why. So he's just stopped a fight between people on stage. He says, I want you all to understand this. Here I am. I take up space. When did I start to feel so out of place? I look in the mirror. That's not my face. Here I am. My hair is thin. I walk into a room and forget why I came in. When did these little signs of age begin? Here I am. And I had a career. I worked at a job that very few people understood. But I was good. You know who you are when you're part of a team. That part of my life, of me, seems like a dream. But still, somehow, I'm ready to go. So full of life and love, I feel it overflow. I just need somebody to let me know. Who am I now? Who am I now?
John, that was so lovely. Oh my goodness. Thank you so
Thank you.
much.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful song. Yeah,
Well,
it
You said it earlier in the show or in the podcast that, this isn't just about retirement. It's so much about, a new phase of your life and aging and also in a culture that's increasingly obsessed with youth and looks and how many things that they can do in their life, where I feel like generations before us kind of had, their one, maybe two career paths and they were kind of set on it and that's what they, that's what folks did. But now you have people, changing wildly, changing career trajectories and, like I said, increasingly,
That's right.
Sorry, millennials and Gen Zers, increasingly narcissistic about, and obsessed with youth and how they look in front of other people. And I think, yeah, that song is such a beautiful reflection of, who am I now in this new stage, and also what this new stage, how it sits with where the world is at now.
Yeah, the way you're saying it, it overcomes my initial worry, which was, boy, this is a terrible idea for a fringe show, because I thought this isn't for fringe audiences at all. But yeah, as I reflected on it, finding meaning in your life knows no generation, no age. So
Yes, and it was especially moving for me. I mean, I'm actually, you heard it on the podcast first here, people. I'm expecting. And so,
oh, congratulations.
thank you so much. So being a performer and having to, look a certain way and be able to move my body, sing and dance and keep up that stamina, but now try to kind of slow down. And take a step back and, figuring out what my body is now and who our family is now once she little girl gets here. So I ex really resonate, or that song really resonates with me. It is. It's who am I now,
Yeah.
in this phase too. So whether it's, retirement or, even high school kids going to college and trying to figure out who they are,
Yes.
it's just beautiful.
No, thank you. Yeah, I'm hoping it cuts across in some way that speaks to people in a broader way. I think it does, but we'll find out.
And absolutely.
yeah, I think especially as artists, there's just so much pressure to do so much so young. But it's also, you're not only entering a new phase of your life through retirement, but through spending more time than ever on your music, on putting your work out there. And I think it's so amazing and important that people know that you can make art, impactful, fantastic art at any time in your life. And if you didn't start when you were 12 years old and you didn't go to XYZ school or you think you don't have whatever resume, you can still make something that touches people.
Yeah.
It's
One of our
beautiful.
actors, one of our actors was a choir director in middle school and high school for something like 30 years, maybe more. I think I have that right. Local schools. And she's done, and she thought, I want to get back into something I really love. So she's in a show. People have all these dimensions to them, and in different times of your life, you fulfill them, or you try.
Yeah, that's really true.
So, yeah, go ahead, Barbara.
Well, one of the documentaries that I'm working on at a development stage right now is about aging vitality and creativity. And that by staying creative in our lives and expressing ourselves, we expand our health and our vitality. So being creative extends your life by about 7 years of a good, solid, just by being self-expressive and in any way that that means. And right, so Mari, you're right. It's being creative and making art happens throughout our entire existence. It's part of who we are.
Yeah, that's so amazing. And I mean, not only does it extend your life, but it completely enriches your life. So you're not just getting 7 years, if that's the average, you're getting seven more fulfilled years
Right.
as, a better and more a better and more fulfilled and content you.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Switching topics a little bit, I want to ask a question for some of our listeners and creatives out there who might be writing something or composing something. What was the process from ideation of this musical? How long in development was it? Did you kind of run things past some friends of yours, or did you have developmental readings? And then what was the process submitting to Fringe, both for the roadshow and for this show?
Okay. The second question is easier to answer. People think that the Fringe is a lottery, and it is. You can enter the lottery. But the other path is to call yourself an independent producer. They have an independent track. All you do is pay a fee, and then as an independent, you get less support from the Fringe, but which means you have to find your own venue. And when you find the venue, you have to pay for your own venue. So there are more expenses, more things for you yourself to pin down, but you get their box office, you get their marketing, you're on their page. And they don't ask you if your show is any good. You just, I want to put on a show, and they trust that, well, if you want to do all that and all that goes with it, you belong in our festival. So anybody out there who wants to put on a show next year, you can do it. I think it's $200. Now, coming up with this, the first show I did was easier because I'd never done one. So there were all these things kind of waiting to come out. This time, I wrote one song that I imagined as militant baby boomers trying to take over the city of Metropolis or whatever it might be. And that's what the show was going to be about. They were going to lead a rebellion. It just didn't work. So I kept the song. I guess actually I shelved it. There was another idea, and I kept a song from that. So that was starting in maybe June of last year. Now we're at September or October. And I finally hit on something that made a little more sense to me. And it just started to develop organically. There were plot twists and plot lines that I had to drop and swap for others, and songs that didn't make it in. But somehow it all got done basically from June to March or April. I don't know. I guess when you want to do it, it just happens. And the writing of the script was really fun. I just went wherever the characters seemed to go. And if I looked at it a few days later and it was no good, I started again. I didn't get a chance to do a reading, but as I did songs, I would do demos of them and send them to my friends and say, what do you think? Or is this funny? Or, you know, just try to get a read out of my family. Of course, my wife Debbie was hearing everything and is a theater person herself and a great source of advice. My kids are too. I don't know. It just didn't seem that hard. It was a pleasure.
That's so lovely. It's so nice when a project really just flows out of you. And you end up with an end product that just sort of feels inevitable, like it always existed in some way. And that's so lovely. And I'm curious, are you guys doing any sort of in the room collaborating? Sometimes working on new work, you have to edit here, change this or that, or is the script totally fixed?
It gets tweaked a little bit, but not much has changed. I'd say the biggest collaborations are with what Barbara does with the cast, and the choreographer surprises us every time. She comes in, we've told her what we're thinking. Everybody's working, everybody's got day jobs, except me, but everybody's got day jobs, and so you don't get a chance to get together and really talk about how it's going to look. So the choreographer, who is about 21, just graduated from the U, I saw her direct a Fringe show last year. She directed The Zoo Story for The Fringe. And I thought, wow, if you can do that, and you were in our show the year before, I know she can sing, I know she can move. That's somebody, I want somebody who can choreograph, who's sensitive to music and the whole context of a show and not just a like a dance pageant. So she comes in and does amazing things.
Yeah.
The show looks like I never thought it would look. I'm babbling here, so feel free to stop me.
No, that's fantastic. I love the description dance pageant. It's not a dance pageant. I love that because, you know, pageant implies, I feel like, something showy, like you're trying to show the audience rather than just doing. That's a great something that my grad professor told me. Don't show the audience, just do it, and they will. You know, the audience is always smarter than you give them credit for, I feel like.
Yes. I heard somebody on another podcast say about musicals, if you can't say it, sing it. And if you can't sing it, dance it. And that's kind of what she does.
That's cool. Fantastic. What's her name?
Bella Maldonado.
Bella Maldonado, giving a shout out to Bella Maldonado. You can see her work in the show as well. So go and get your tickets again, minnesotafringe.org. Barbara?
Yes, she's wonderful. I want to reiterate something that John said that I think is really important for young artists to remember. It's about us showing up. It's about us keeping doing it. It's so easy to feel like to get stuck creatively or to feel like you're getting too many no's with your grant requests or your work. And I think the trick is that you keep working, you keep doing the work, you keep showing up, you keep moving ahead, and the successes are part of a flow of your life, and they are part of what happens as being an artist, and just to keep at it. Don't let anyone tell you that you can't do this. There's no one else that gets to tell me I can't make a film. I mean, maybe they won't give me money to make a film. That makes it a longer time to make the film. But nobody can tell me that something that's important to me isn't going to be created. And I think John hit upon that really well when he said, you know, if you want to make a show, make a show. You can do it.
Can I add something?
Yeah.
Barbara just reminded me. The other thing is keep learning. After the first show, I just wasn't satisfied with my compositional abilities. And so I went to MacPhail and studied with a teacher I knew there. I studied composition. I told her what I wanted to do. And she said, oh, you want to learn 16th century counterpoint. I did not think that's what I wanted to do. But I did study that with her for about a year. And the main thing it did for me was kind of demystified composition. Mm. She would say, well, do this for next week. How can I do this for next week? I have to obsess over it. I have to pull it out like it's really important work and you can't do it. No, just do it. And so I kept, it made writing seem like something you really can just sit down and do. Plus I learned about 16th century counterpoint, which does not directly appear in the show, but it does. You learn things that shape what you do. You learn that by studying anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to touch on something you said too, Barbara, and John, the staying curious too. You know, it might not be something that you're in love with right away, but if you're curious about it, you never know where it's going to show up again. And some of the, you know, I remember getting cast as Nell in Comedy of Errors, and I desperately wanted to play Luciana or Adriana, one of the two sisters, or even one of the Antipholi or Dromios, because I thought, oh gosh, you know, I really, you know, those are my parts, and I really want to do that. And, you know, so many times in my career, I have been cast in other things and, turned down and but then cast in this other thing that I had no idea I was going to get or didn't think I was right for. And if you lean into those things instead of sort of dwelling on what you didn't get or what you can't do or you don't have the money for right now, if you really lean into those and see them as opportunities to stay curious and what can I glean and learn from this thing that will help me next year when I am making that film or when, learning 16 point, whatever it was, John, the how is that going to inform my compositions, 10 years down the road when you're making musicals for, history theater? You don't know. So, I really highly encourage students and well, at everyone at any age, really just stay curious and lean into those opportunities because you never know where they're going to show up again and you'll use them and you'll think, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I got to play Nell in Comedy of Errors because it really, made my comedy skills amazing, which helps me with this other thing. So, Mari.
And I mean, it's interesting because I do think that we need to be learning and we need to, because you can use these lessons other places in your life. But I just read this really beautiful letter that Kurt Vonnegut wrote to a young kid. He might have been in middle school. And he basically said that the only thing that there is in life, in a creative life, is the act of becoming. And he gave the child an assignment, which is to write a 6-line poem that rhymes, and then rip it up into 10 pieces and throw each piece into a different garbage receptacle. Because the only thing that matters is that you did it and you are creating and you are performing the act of becoming in your life. And it'll give you practice to keep doing this and just become the person that you, the best person that you can be, and be constantly asking yourself, who am I now?
Reminds me of what happens to a Fringe show after the festival is over.
Hopefully not this one. Hopefully this goes on to have a life.
Yes.
But we
Yeah, you
are,
never know.
yes, we are coming up on time. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes left. So we just want to plug the show one more time. This is Make America Gray Again. What are your dates? What are your show dates? One more time.
August 2nd through the 9th. There are 5 shows during that period. The first shows are the 2nd and the 3rd.
Yes, at the Phoenix Theater, and you can get your tickets at minnesotafringe.org. Do you guys have any closing remarks about the show? Things that you really want people to know that you didn't say?
Well,
It's just really fun. It's just fun. I just think people will have a really fun time with the show to come and see it. I think they'll walk away feeling really good.
I fervently hope so. If they do, I do.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, thank you both so much for coming on the show. I
Oh,
hope
thank you. Thank
everybody
you for
goes to
having
see
us.
it.
Thank you
Yes.
for
Get
having
your
us both.
2-for-1 tickets. Look for those. And as John said, it's the first year that Fringe is offering that. And I think it's for all shows, you said, John?
No, you get to pick all shows get to pick one night where they have a 2-for-1 night. I'm not sure if all the producers did that, but you had the opportunity.
Excellent. So get
And
your
ours is the
2-for-1
first
tickets.
night because we want everyone to see the show the first night. Well, we want everyone to see the show all nights, but the first night will be really exciting.
And if you like the show, you at the Fringe, you can also post a review on the show page. And if you post a review that says you like it, it tends to get more people to come. If you post a review that says you didn't like it, perhaps you should reconsider posting that review. It can do no good.
Yes. Then you just saw the show that wasn't for you, and you got to see another one.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's right.
exactly.
There are about 100 shows this year.
Well, thank you so much. Find us at mouthing off, badmouthtc.com. Thank you, Mari, and thank you, John and Barbara.
Thank
Was a
you,
pleasure.
Amanda.